This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is On the Media. I'm Michael Loewinger. Since the Supreme Court gutted Roe v. Wade last month, Democratic lawmakers have proposed a series of workarounds to codify protections for abortion rights.
We must expand the court.
Congressman Hank Johnson and Senator Ed Markey are pushing legislation to add 4 seats to the Supreme Court.
The House voted to legalize abortion nationwide on Friday. The House measure would actually expand Roe, but it has little chance of becoming law. Democrats don't have the votes to get it through the Senate.
Which is precisely why some activists are pointing to a solution that wouldn't require input from Congress. The Equal Rights Amendment, a constitutional amendment with a simple premise. Its first clause, just 24 words long.
Equality of rights under the law shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or any state on account of sex.
And that's basically it.
John Oliver on Last Week Tonight.
And the idea behind it is broadly popular. In fact, according to advocates, 80% of us think it's already in the Constitution.
Part of the confusion might have to do with the fact that Congress already passed the ERA in 1972.
Proclaiming once and for all that women have all the same rights as that other sex.
The agreement now goes to the states and must be ratified by 38 of them.
So in 1972, after this huge surge of the women's liberation movement, the Equal Rights Amendment had huge amounts of support.
Kate Kelly is a human rights lawyer who recently wrote an opinion piece for the LA Times titled, Best Way to Protect Abortion Rights? Finalize the ERA.
It sailed through Congress, both houses, and then in the first year following passage in Congress, it was ratified by 30 states. Everyone thought it was a done deal.
But it wasn't.
It wasn't.
Because at the same time as this sort of grassroots surge to ratify the ERA was picking up steam, there was also this anti-ERA campaign that was sort of playing out in Washington and also in the media.
The anti-ERA movement ramped up, and it sort of found its spokesperson in a woman named Phyllis Schlafly. She ran twice for Congress against men and lost both times and wanted power. And the way that she found power was leading a movement to defeat equal rights for women in this country.
Some of her arguments were kind of like standard conservative stuff, like, oh, this amendment will give more authority to the federal government and take authority away from the states. But it seemed like a lot of her rhetoric was explicitly anti-feminist.
I think that it is an anti-family movement. I think they target men as the enemy. They teach that women have been kept in a condition of oppression and serfdom for all these years, and that society owes it to them to take care of their children and to find them jobs at the expense of more qualified men. It is a negative view of life.
Phyllis used scare tactics. So you're going to lose your benefits. You're going to be drafted. You're going to be forced to go into bathrooms with men. Same-sex marriage was another major component of the anti-ERA campaign. So they really stoked homophobic rhetoric. It was all to scare people into thinking that your way of life, your way of thinking is under attack.
I understand that there were a lot of scare tactics, but was there any truth to these social shifts that she was warning against?
I was raised Mormon, and my mother and my grandmother were assigned to fight against the ERA. So the way that I learned about it was going to destroy the family, society would collapse, you know, all these very grandiose visions of what the ERA would accomplish. And now that I'm adult and now that I've gone to law school, and what I've realized is almost everything Phyllis Schlafly warned against has happened. For example, Social Security is now available on a gender-neutral basis. Federal judge has said that women will be subjected to the draft were there ever to be one to be reinstated, even without the ERA. Same-sex marriage exists. You know, all of these things have basically come to fruition, and society has not fallen apart. Families still exist.
I feel like Phyllis Schlafly is kind of having a bit of a renaissance recently, in part because of that Hulu miniseries, Mrs. America.
Section 2 states the Congress shall have the power to enforce by appropriate legislation the provisions of this article. Now, if the ERA passes, it will give the federal government a massive amount of power. I mean, are we no longer the party of limited government and states' rights?
You have no idea the pressure that we're under.
We have to give the women's movement something.
Oh, I think you've given them plenty.
The main flaw of the show, Mrs. America, to me, is that it depicts Phyllis Schlafly as the person who killed the Equal Rights Amendment, and it kind of frames the entire fight as a catfight. Like, oh, here's these glamorous ladies like Gloria Steinem versus this housewife, Phyllis Schlafly, and kind of leaves men out of the picture, ironically, in a way that protects them from critique, because Phyllis Schlafly never voted against the ERA. The people who actually voted against the ERA were men. They eventually extended the deadline from 1979 to 1982 in Congress because there were 100,000 people that marched in Washington in support of the Equal Rights Amendment and in support of extending the deadline. The trick was they extended the deadline only 3 years. They could have gotten rid of it. They could have eliminated it entirely. Many amendments have had no deadlines attached to them, but they did it in a way that they knew that the state senators in the most difficult states could outlast that 3 years.
Congress had asked that 38 states, three quarters of states, ratify the amendment, and we only got to 35. So It seemed like it was dead for a while, right?
Yeah. In fact, Phyllis Schlafly, in 1982, when the extended deadline lapsed, Phyllis Schlafly had a huge gala blowout party in Washington, D.C., and they all celebrated, and they said, ding dong, the ERA is dead.
They played the song, ding dong, the witch is dead, right?
No one said she didn't have a sense of humor. Yeah, so they celebrated, they said it's dead, they claimed victory, and they went on to create an incredibly robust movement on the infrastructure that she built, largely focusing on anti-abortion campaigns.
I saw another speech from 1982 where she said, the ERA has been defeated, it will not pass, no state has passed it since 1977, and no state ever will. She was wrong.
Contrary to her words, the ERA was ratified in Nevada in 2017, kind of out of nowhere. Like, everyone was like, wait, what? The following year, in 2018, it was ratified in Illinois, Phyllis Schlafly's state, which had never ratified. And then in 2020, it was ratified in Virginia. So she was dead wrong. The ERA was ratified by three additional states, completing that 38 necessary required under Article 5 of the Constitution.
This is kind of where the story gets like wonky and weird, because These states procedurally ratified it. But Obviously the modern critics of the ERA say, we've long passed Congress's deadline for doing this, so those don't count. And also, during Schlafly's campaign, some five states tried to take their ratifications back. So It seems like there are a few different ways of doing math on this topic.
Yeah, I mean, the math isn't difficult. Article 5 of the U.S. Constitution has only two explicit requirements. One of them is that it's passed by more than two-thirds of Congress, and the second is that it's ratified by three-fourths of the states, which at this point is 38. Opponents of equality will make every single procedural argument they can to keep it out of the Constitution. And part of it is a states' rights issue. You know, Nevada, Illinois, and Virginia have ratified it. Their legislatures acted on behalf of their constituencies, and those ratifications are not being recognized by the federal government.
In fact, those three states, after ratifying the ERA, actually sued the archivist of the United States, basically the chief librarian of the National Archives. Why that guy?
There's a statutory requirement that the archivist, a poor unelected librarian, someone who's only ever worked in library stacks, not a political person, not an elected position, is the person who's charged with certifying and publishing the amendment once it reaches the necessary ratifications. The boss of the archivist is the president. So Joe Biden at any point could tell the current acting archivist, go ahead, certify it, publish it in the Federal Register. When we print out these copies of the Constitution, it will have 28 amendments instead of 27, and the Equal Rights Amendment will be one of them.
He has spoken about it a couple times since he took office. Kamala Harris, when she was running for president, said that she would ratify the ERA in her first 100 days. So I don't get it. Why hasn't it happened?
Why are they not acting? There may be many reasons, but one of them could be fear of, you know, a clash with the Supreme Court. If Biden goes ahead and certifies, and then the case against the archivist by the three states that have recently ratified rises to the Supreme Court level, perhaps they're afraid of a constitutional crisis. When the president says the Constitution is one thing, but the Supreme Court or another branch says another thing.
In an op-ed for the LA Times earlier this year, you wrote, finalizing the ERA is the clearest path forward for abortion rights. How would that work?
This is maybe the only thing I don't disagree on with Phyllis Schlafly. I believe that it absolutely will be a path to cementing and finalizing abortion rights. And the reason is Roe was decided based on privacy. Privacy is an unenumerated right, which means it's not written anywhere in the Constitution. It's essentially derived from conjecture of the other rights.
It's a relatively new legal concept.
Privacy was invented in 1965 by Justice Douglas in a case called Griswold versus Connecticut, which legalized contraceptives for married people. So before 1965, this concept of privacy did not exist. He said that he found privacy in what he called the penumbras of the Constitution. So these overlapping shadows of the Constitution. I like to say that he shimmied it in there, you know. And if we enumerate equality, we will not need penumbras. We will not need shimmying. We will be in the Constitution. And that is why the opposition to the ERA is so deathly afraid of it. That is why when you go to state ERA meetings and legislatures, the National Conference on Catholic Bishops is there at every meeting, every hearing, opposing the ERA. They are mortally afraid that we will get it into the Constitution and we'll have permanent protection for abortion rights.
Biden has said that he really thinks Congress should extend the deadline or remove the deadline for state ratification. He's kicking the can down the road. You think it's his responsibility?
Have you been watching the news? Like, getting a 60-person majority in the Senate has proven nearly impossible for every issue, including but not limited to voting rights, which are pivotal and essential to our democracy. So if we can't even get it together to vote on protecting voting rights, I'm not sure that demanding that we do something so bold as ratifying the ERA is going to happen. So I think it's really disingenuous to say, oh, Congress needs to act, when it's very, very clear that there's a concrete and pretty simple step that the president can take on his own.
Kate, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Kate Kelly is a human rights attorney and the author of the book Ordinary Equality. That's it for this week's show. On the Media is produced by Eloise Blondio, Molly Schwartz, Rebecca Clark Callender, Candace Wong, and Suzanne Gaber, with help from Savannah Collins. And our show was edited this week
by our executive producer, Katia Rogers. Our technical director is Jennifer Munson. Our engineers this week were Andrew Nerviano and Adrian Lilly. On the Media is a production of WNYC Studios. Brooke Gladstone will be back next week. I'm Micah Loewinger.